We'd just like to let everybody know that we are back and from our lunch, for those who are not following us on Twitter. The next 5 minutes or so, we'll be back with the actual convention itself. In the meantime, enjoy some music. Those who'd like to follow us, the Twitter address is ICEB2012 and Skype is also ICEB2012. I'm suspecting that we would be going live any minute. So, until then, a bit of background sounds for you. Thanks for joining us. Mm-hmm. We've also been made aware of the problem with the www.iseb2012.net redirection. I will look into that as soon as possible and make an announcement pertaining to that. Apologies if any inconvenience was...
Speaking. Greetings, everyone. We're doing the two-minute call, so please can you take your seats? Thank you.
We'll be starting any minute. Thank you for your patience.
Everyone, and welcome to session three of the ICEB 5th General Assembly here in Johannesburg. Special hello to our listeners on the streaming. We've had Hanif tells us that he can figure out from the IP addresses that he's seeing on his screen which countries are listening in. So we've got people from Australia and the UK and Israel have popped up, and of course in South Africa itself. Somebody from Cape Town contacted Christo and knows another member in the group who hasn't seen for 40 years, so it's amazing what these things do. Thank you very much, everyone, for being back so promptly. Remember that sound recordings are occurring. There's a possibility of photographs, and I'll tell you what we're up to in this session. I'm going to call on Jean Obi in a minute. And she has something to do with maths, which, as it's not my best subject, I'm slightly nervous. John says it's an exam. After that, there are country this afternoon. This afternoon we will be taking country reports from Australia in this first city break for afternoon tea at 2:45. Right, so can I recognise Jean Obi, please, and to put me out of my misery.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. In connection with the mathematics, I've discovered recently quite a number of countries are interested in getting the technical guidelines cut down to some expense, so into sections, so that it would be useful for different levels, different school levels. And Josie House has got quite a lot of material on this, and she has agreed to meet with us and share it with us. So we're proposing an informal meeting on Tuesday evening, since we don't have anything formal on Tuesday evening. And I'm suggesting 5:30, if that's convenient to other people. If people have an objection to 5:30 and want to suggest another time, please let me know. And if you could give some idea how many of you are interested in coming, so we know what size of room we need to use, unless we can have it in here, maybe, if nobody else is using it. Thank you.
Yes, I'm sure you will be able to have it in here, unless Kathy Donaldson signals otherwise. Unless there's a problem that she knows of to do with the hotel. But we'll be able to confirm that before the end of the day. Yeah. They'll confirm with Kathy, but that will be possible.
Thank you.
All right. Now, this is one of the fun parts of ICEB meetings. We get to find out what each country is up to. And we start with Australia and Christine Simpson.
Madam Chair, fellow delegates, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you may be, I cannot believe that it is 4 years since we farewelled many of you from Melbourne with the promise that we would catch up in 2012. I'm delighted to be here as part of the Australian delegation. I would like to highlight today some of the matters raised in my written report, of which you already have received a copy. Australia is celebrating the National Year of Reading in 2012. As part of the national launch on 14 February, Prime Minister Julia Gillard was presented with a braille and tactile version of Alison Lester's Are We There Yet?, a children's storybook chronicling a family journey around Australia. The braille and full-colour tactile version of this Penguin publication was produced by Vision Australia. Copies have been presented to various state libraries and are included in a touring exhibition. The Australian Braille Renaissance is growing stronger, becoming more influential, a better communicator, more participatory and outgoing, and, above all, a better communicator. Its member personnel are enthusiastic, talented, open to change, willing to teach, to learn and to share. The ABA is constituted as a subcommittee of the Roundtable on Information Access for People with Print Disabilities. Its members at the national level are delegates of Roundtable member organisations with an interest in the production, teaching and use of Braille. In 2009 we conducted a strategic review and the key outcomes have resulted in updated terms of reference and a revised structure. We have replaced our state-based ABA subcommittees with Regional Braille Forums, or RBFs for short. These Braille Forums comprise individual members who are also interested in production, teaching or use of Braille. Individuals do not have to be associated with a Roundtable member organisation. They participate at a local level in their own right. They aim to promote with meetings often including guest speakers and a range of interactive Braille-related activities. Regional Braille forums provide for a better information flow as their conveners participate in ABA executive meetings. Major ABA communication activities now include production and updating of manuals, more about these in a moment, AusBraille listserv, our website, and the ABA Facebook page. At the ABA annual meeting for 2005, Australia voted to adopt unified English Braille with a phased transition over 5 years. At subsequent meetings, most organisations reported their implementation plans were ahead of schedule, but were being hampered by a lack of UEB training and reference materials. Australia has now made a full transition to UEB, and our transcribers, educators and readers are reaping the benefits of this single Braille code. However, for some of us as readers, little has changed, as we still want and need to read materials brailled prior to 2010, as well as materials produced in countries where UEB is not yet in use. Following Australia's 2005 decision, there were few teaching and learning resources available for UEB other than the Braille Primer, Australian edition. There was clearly a need for an authoritative and complete elaboration of the rules of the new code that could be used by Braille educators, producers and readers. A project brief was adopted by the ABA executive in August 2007 for the development of what has come to be known as the UEB rulebook. Following some fine-tuning and discussion at the 2008 ICEB General Assembly, sponsorship was sought for the project and five organisations contributed funds to allow the project to commence in August 2008. These financial supporters demonstrated their commitment to UEB and the objectives of the rulebook. Australia's Braille readers thank Royal Institute for Deaf and Blind Children, New South Wales, Royal National Institute of Blind People, UK, Royal New Zealand Foundation of the Blind, Royal Society for the Blind of South Australia, Vision Australia. I was privileged to be engaged by the Round Table to edit and compile this definitive publication. I worked under the guidance of the Rulebooks Project Advisory Committee, comprising representatives from the ABA Executive, the sponsoring organisations, the Braille Authority of New Zealand and ICEB. The Rulebook could not have been developed without the commitment of many people and groups. In particular, I thank Phyllis Landon as Chair of the UEB Rules Committee for her help and guidance throughout the project. Phyllis's patience has been never-ending, and her understanding of the difficulties I have experienced as a totally blind editor of such a complex print document has been truly appreciated and most encouraging. I acknowledge with appreciation the guidance given to me by members of the Project Advisory Committee chaired by Bruce McGuire. I also want to recognise the practical help and advice provided by Leona Holloway and Bill Jolly. The ICEB has been strongly committed to this project since the earliest stages of planning. It expedited the work of its Rules Committee and other UEB project committees to ensure completion on time and within budget. For this, I express a very sincere thank you. The Rules of Unified English Braille was launched by the President of the World Blind Union, Mary Ann Diamond, in Sydney on 5 June 2010. The rulebook is now available for free download under the Creative Commons license from the ICEB website. Australian Braille Authority representatives have been kept busy in documenting and sharing their knowledge. The Braille Primer, Australian edition, edited by Josie House, filled a desperately needed gap by assisting teachers and transcribers to understand and use the new code in their day-to-day work. Josie is now close to completing a major revision, which will be widely promoted once available. Josie and Bruce McGuire were part of the group chaired by Janet Reynolds, responsible for developing the Unified English Braille Guidelines for Technical Material. Although most work was completed prior to the 2008 General Assembly, there were still some finishing touches and much careful proofing to be completed. This manual is a reference regularly relied upon in Australia by transcribers for the information it contains and the examples it provides. Working with a small reference group, Leona Holloway has taken responsibility for editing our DBD producer's manual. This documents ways in which transcribers can get the best from Duxbury Braille Translator. Leona is also leading a project to produce an ABA Braille formatting manual. This will contain many guidelines and explanations, few actual rules, but lots of how-tos, examples. Australia now has 29 holders of the Trans-Tasman Certificate of Proficiency in Unified English Braille, 7 of whom are touch readers. The Trans-Tasman examination, offered annually and simultaneously, is jointly conducted by the Australian Braille Authority and the Braille Authority of New Zealand, Aotearoa Trust. We thank our NZ colleagues for their help and cooperation with this examination. It tests a candidate's knowledge of the UEB code when proofreading a Braille passage, when transcribing from print to Braille, and when back transcribing from Braille to print. It is hardly necessary to remind ICEB delegates that 2009 marked the bicentenary of Louis Braille's birth. However, it was necessary to tell the Australian community, so we did. As Bruce McGuire wrote in his chair's report to the 2010 ABA annual meeting, as Louis Braille's five-pointed star of reading, writing, thought, participation and independence hovered over us throughout 2009, we were able to enjoy a rare period of exaltation as we celebrated Braille past and present. Australia celebrated in a myriad of creative and engaging ways. There were birthday parties and cakes, school plays, launch of a dedicated website, picnics, competitions, giveaways, displays and demonstrations, media interviews and lots of speaking engagements for blind people, speaking about Braille, its history, its importance to them and its uses. Our written report contains a far more comprehensive summary of these events. Beyond all of this local activity, some among us have found time to be involved in Braille at an international level. At least 7 Australians participated and presented papers at Braille 21 in Leipzig last year. Bill Jolly has many years of experience working on international projects. We in Australia were honoured when he was invited to give a keynote address at the CNIB Braille Conference of 2009. His presentation entitled Braille Today for Tomorrow, Joining the Dots to Cover the World, included some personal reflections on Braille as the bedrock of his literacy and discuss the utility of UEB for outreach to developing countries, where most blind people live. Bill was also invited to lead a workshop on Australia's implementation of UEB. Geordie Howe now convenes the ICEB Braille Music Committee, and we are confident that with her well-developed skill set, she will truly stamp her mark in this area of Braille usage. Unfortunately, Geordie was not able to join us this week, but her thoughts are certainly with us. Leona Holloway and I represent Australia on the UEB Code Maintenance Committee, chaired by Phyllis. Leona's practical understanding of the finer points of UEB, her eye for inconsistency, her attention to detail, and her ability to think ahead clearly about issues which may cause confusion to others, makes her an excellent contributor to this committee. Frances Gentle is chair of the Pacific Region International Council for Education of People with Visual Impairment. She advises that awareness and knowledge of UEB is steadily increasing in the South Pacific. Several countries have received training in UEB through distance education programs provided by the Royal Institute for Deaf and Blind Children, and or through intensive face-to-face training programs provided by the State Braille and Large Print Service of the New South Wales Education Department. So that's JOSI's employer. Pacific Island countries now using UEB include Fiji, Kiribati, Papua New Guinea, Samoa, Solomon Islands and Vanuatu. Our written report includes details of the work being done by organisations and individuals in the Pacific region. In conclusion, Braille in Australia is strengthening. ABA is exerting its influence. UEB has been adopted and implemented. Rule books and user manuals have or are being developed. Regular conduct of the Trans-Tasman Certificate of Proficiency in Unified English Braille is in place. Exciting advances in Braille production and distribution are being made, and outreach programs to promote and teach the Braille code are occurring. The period ahead looks exciting and challenging, and hopefully in 4 years' time we will again be able to report on further substantial developments and achievements. I look forward to an opportunity to report to you at that time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Christine. We have about 7 or 8 minutes of time for questions for Christine before I have to sort of ring a bell. So do we have any questions for Christine? UK? Someone on the UK table?
It's Mike Townsend. Christine, I'm very interested in the regional Braille forums. How local are they? Are they city-based, or do they cover a sort of bigger region than that? How often do they meet? What sort of membership do they have? Sounds a great idea to get people engaged in Braille.
At the moment, Mike, those regional Braille forums are only very much in their infancy. I don't think they've really managed much past crawling at this stage. Originally, we had state-based organisations, and we found there that the only people that were involved were ones who lived pretty close to wherever the group happened to be meeting. With our regional Braille forums, it's certainly our intention that they be just covering a geographic area, so it might be a major town in rural area where there are a group of Braille readers. But at this stage, we haven't really got those off the ground very much. We only have a couple, and they're mainly existing subcommittees that have gone through and changed their name and working under the new structure. Our goal for this year is to try and get others, or to make the existing ones perhaps covering a smaller geographic area and spread that interest so that it really is far more community-based.
Thank you, Christine. Any more questions for Christine? No. Bill Paul?
Bill Poole, UK. Now, you've obviously been very successful in making the transition to UEB, and I'm therefore interested in knowing what your policy is going to be in relation to the replacement of books which you say are written in other Braille codes, which people still need to read. I mean, do you get most of these from other countries, so and will you be waiting for UEB versions to appear from those countries, or will you, in relation to your own productions in older Brailles and in perhaps of some of the others, will you be initiating a transcription process? Because of course a retranscription process. Because of course you'll realise that. Resources taken up with retranscribing texts are meaning that valuable new books that you want to produce, for example, educational books, will suffer to some extent.
Bill, to answer that, all new materials are being produced in UEB. Existing materials. Currently, our existing libraries, we're certainly not throwing out material, and that's one of the reasons why people are reading both codes. We still get quite an amount of material. As individuals, we get quite an amount of material from other countries, from UK and the States particularly, and so we're, of course, reading the code that is in use there at the time when we get the book. Replaced, but mainly only children's reading material. As far as adult reading material is concerned, people borrowing from libraries are borrowing sometimes UEB, sometimes the older materials. They're not being replaced as such, but if something happened and it had to be done again, well, of course, it would be done in the UEB code. Does that answer the question?
Yes.
Now, I'm going to give the speaking opportunity to John Simpson. Although he's an observer, he is holding a very senior position at Vision Australia. And then after John, Antoinette.
Thanks, Mary. I just want to pick up on that previous question from the point of view of Vision Australia as a major producer and distributor of Braille materials. Certainly our policy is that all new material is produced in UEB. I guess that goes without saying. We currently have a legacy collection, part of which is in electronic files, and the organisation's policy is that we wouldn't withdraw those files or re-emboss material because it's not in UEB. We'd continue to make it available. Our major challenge, of course, though, is the extensive hard copy Braille collection that we have that's not in electronic file format. And we're currently wrestling, Bill, with the question about not only about recreating some of that content but in electronic form, but also whether we would do that as a direct replica of what was in the past or whether we would bring it into UEB. My thinking is that we will probably... what we bring forward will create in UEB to modernise it.
Antoinette Botha?
In South Africa, Antoinette Botha from South Africa, we have for a long time used UEB symbols which have been either new or changed from pre-unified Braille, to teach people UBC who read other Braille. Now the time has come to teach people who started learning UBC to read old transcriptions. And we're just going to do the turnaround thing. we on our to-do list is to make a list of some old symbols which are different from UEB and give them their meaning. A short little thing that we publish widely in our magazines and also make available for any individual who ask for it. And I think that for the moment, for the temporary transition, is very helpful.
Thank you, Antoinette. Mandy from the UK.
A lot of our concern in the UK has been expressed by with regards to adoption of UEB has been by older readers, and I just wondered if there was any tips that you have about easing them into the change. I mean, the focus is rightly on education, but our older users do need a change path to be made as smooth as possible.
That's a tricky one, Mandy, and it's come up for discussion several times at our ABA national meetings. But basically, some of the organisations around the country have encouraged people, if they had concerns and didn't feel that they could work through it alone. We did have in the front of all our volumes something similar to what Antoinette said, where it was basically a cheat sheet with the new symbols in it, but now producers have stopped putting those into the front of public enough down the track that people know them or know how to reference that material. But for readers who did want some help and some encouragement, I suppose you'd call it, our Braille instructors, our adult Braille instructors around the country would spend time with them, sometimes as individuals, sometimes in a group setting, to go through some of those changes and help them to work through it and understand them better. And we found that was quite a successful way to do it.
Any more questions for Christine? All right. Thank you very much, Christine. I think now we can move on to Canada and Jen Golder.
Sorry about that. It helps if I turn the microphone on. Good afternoon to everyone who's here, and also to anyone who, anyone online. I'm, as you already know, I'm Jen Golden from Canada, and I'm going. What's been going on in our country for the last 4 years? A lot has happened in the last 4 years, and so I'm not gonna read everything word for word. You have the reports as well. So, but I am kind of gonna summarize what's been going on. And one of the things that I was thinking about as I was writing this report was just how we've all, I'm sure all of us have heard statements such as, this is an exciting time in the field of Braille, between Unified English Braille and advances in Braille-related technology. There's never a dull moment for use and teach it. So I'm going to start with Braille 200, and again, I know I'm not the first person to bring this up, but I'll let you know a little bit about what went on in Canada to celebrate the 200th anniversary of Louis Braille's birth. There were a number of activities across the country, and again, as in Australia, they ranged from different kinds of celebrations, birthday cakes. I know one event that I attended had Happy Birthday, Bonne Fête, Louis Braille in Smarties on top of the cake. It was very cool. And so there were all different things going on. There was a Braille 200 committee that was set up, and what they sort of did there was a website that had that listed the events and activities, or at least some of them. Again, this isn't going to be an exhaustive list. I think there were some things that happened that, you know, none of us necessarily know happened. People just sort of took the initiative and organized things. But the site featured articles, personal anecdotes related to Braille, as well as resources for learning the basics of the code. The committee consisted of members of different organizations, and part of their job was to sort of oversee events and also the website. Just they coordinated different things across the country. the event, of course, that I will be most familiar with is the event that the Canadian Braille Authority organized. We called it the School Braille Challenge. Maybe not a very exciting name, but it summed up what we did. It was an event that ran throughout the 2008-09 school year. And what happened was that the challenge provided elementary school students with a unique opportunity to learn Braille and just to gain a better appreciation of the importance of Braille literacy skills for blind people, probably students in particular, because that was sort of their focus. What we did was we gave the students a list of activities they could do, and these ranged from labeling classroom doors. One of them was take your favorite board game and make it accessible to a blind person. They could produce part or all of a Braille menu from a local restaurant. There were, if I remember right, I think there were about 15 activities in total, and the students could choose how few or how many they wanted to do. They could do them individually or as a classroom. We also had messages that we put up on our site in uncontracted SimBraille, and the students had the opportunity to decode these messages. So we translated them. We had them as I'm sure many of you are aware, Canada is a bilingual country, so we had them in English and French. And we had tutorials, free online tutorials were made available so that the students could learn the alphabet. And so depending on the number of activities that the students completed, participants would they'd be eligible for either a gold, silver, or bronze certificate. And I'd like to give credit to the Provincial Resource Centre for the Visually Impaired there in British Columbia. And they actually produced all the certificates for us. They did certificates in English and French. We had quite a few students in Quebec who participated, so we did have certificates in both languages. And they produced over 60 bronze, silver, and golds in total for students across the country. So we did definitely get a lot of participation. I got a lot of emails about it, a lot of questions, and the interesting thing about it was that while sighted students had a chance to learn about Louis Braille and the value of the code that he invented, blind students had an opportunity to take on a leadership role in their with their classmates because they could help their sighted peers as they were decoding the messages and learning Braille. The blind students got just, you know, this opportunity to be in somewhat of a leadership position, which they may or may not have had a chance to do before. So, like I said, that's not an exhaustive list of the events and activities that happened. There were a number of presentations that happened across the country. It was just, I think someone mentioned earlier that it just gave Braille a little bit more of a profile. And our challenge has, of course, is to try to maintain that. So I think it was a neat opportunity for us to just make people in different walks of life, different areas of society, sort of more aware of the importance of Braille to those of us who use it. I'm now going to just move on and talk about UEB, which, again, I'm, of course, not the first person to bring this up. In 2010, the Canadian Braille Authority voted to adopt UEB. I have to say, since the time that we adopted it, voted to adopt it, which was April 2010, there hasn't been a whole lot of movement in terms of implementation, but I will get to that. The situation in Canada is a little bit complicated, or I suppose I should say a lot complicated, because not only do we have two languages, I know that's nothing to nine official languages, but it, which I find, as a linguist, I find quite exciting, but it does add a level of challenge. Also, education in Canada is a provincial, it's under provincial jurisdiction, which means that to get the ministries of education on board, all of them, it involves 10 provinces and 3 territories, and as you can imagine, that has its challenges to get everybody to agree and get everybody on the same page. So in order to affect the implementation, this is sort of what we need to do. One of the big concerns for the resource centers that produce Braille is in the elementary and high school system is the cost of the transition. This is especially in times of what our government calls fiscal restraint. It's something that causes people concern to, you know, try to figure out how are we going to afford to produce, to make the transition. And there's a concern that, well, we'll have to be transcribing things into codes. And so that's one of the things that CBA needs to, you know, we need to be able to address these concerns, especially where technical material is concerned. It can be a challenge to promote this. Again, I will come back on and touch on what we're proposing, how we're proposing to approach this issue. The other issue in Canada is that, as a rule, we tend to follow BANA when it comes to Braille code, literary code updates and things like that. So for us, adopting UEB when BANA has not yet chosen to do so was rather an unprecedented step, I guess, to say the least. There were a lot of people who wondered why we would do this. Basically, the CBA board and membership felt strongly that it's imperative that Braille keep pace with print, and that we felt that UEB was actually the best means of achieving this, and we felt that we're never going to implement it if we don't make a decision to adopt it. We're never going to make progress on the issue if we don't make a decision. So we decided that, all right, we're just going to jump in and go for it. We had seen that other countries had made the transition successfully, so that was encouraging for us. So that's a very simplistic explanation as to why Canada has voted to some other point, if you have questions, and just even my own personal change of opinion, I guess we'll call it, with regard to UEB. I'd be happy to talk about that, as I said, in more detail at some other point. But that's just sort of a simplistic explanation as to why we chose to go for it and vote to adopt UEB. So now the focus for us really is the development of a strategy. Having said that, that not a lot has changed, there has been progress made in the right direction. CNIB is producing all of its internal material in UEB, and workshops are offered for transcribers, teachers, and interested Braille users. Under the leadership of Darlene Bogart and Phyllis Landon, my fellow delegates, CNIB has developed materials so that teachers and transcribers who are already familiar with Braille can begin to learn UEB. The main instruction manual for teaching UEB is also complete. The publication Celebrating Braille, a Canadian Approach has now been modified for teaching UEB to adults. One thing I just wanted to add here is that the CNIB library has also purchased some books in UEB, and this wasn't intentional, but it just happened that I read a couple of them, and I just wanted to make a couple of quick comments on that. First is that one of the books I read contained a significant amount of French text in the book, and the additional information that was provided by UEB with regard to the accents, I found that incredibly useful. So I'm actually quite glad that I happened to read that particular book in UEB. And the other thing I wanted to say is that the first book I read, it was just a novel, and it was Australian, and it was a very good book, by the way. I can't remember what it was called, but it was really good. And I opened the book and discovered that it was in UEB, and I thought, oh, this is great, because I was familiar with UEB, but not to the point where I mean, even now, I wouldn't consider myself an expert, but basically, the symbols sheet that Christine mentioned earlier, I did find that helpful. I used it a couple of times as I was reading. But I just wanted to say, for anyone who's interested, that, to be honest, after the first couple of pages, I really didn't even notice that I was reading UEB. Like, it didn't distract me. It didn't slow me down. It didn't prevent me from the real object of what I was trying to do, which was enjoy the novel. So I just wanted to mention that for people who may be wondering, that my perspective as a Braille user was just that, you know, the symbol sheet was helpful. I think that was a great idea. But to be honest, after that, you just get used to it. It just takes practice, maybe. But like I said, after a few pages, it wasn't detracting from my experience of reading the book. So I just wanted to mention that. Back to our progress in the implementation of UEB. CBA is coordinating a UEB retreat. Now, I will say that since I wrote this report, it's now being called a UEB summit. So we'll go with that. But the point is still the same. In the end of May, beginning of June of this year, Kay Holbrook and Betty Noble are coordinating this UEB summit. And basically, it's a three-day summit, and research will be conducted to determine how easy or difficult it is for teachers, Braille users, and transcribers to learn UEB, including both literary and technical materials. We'll also explore back translation to see what advantages this will provide for students and teachers in the classroom. And the final day will be devoted to developing the framework for a strategy to move forward with the implementation of UEB in Canada, which is very exciting. So I'm just going to move on to changes to the Canadian Braille Authority. As I said, we've talked about it being an exciting time in the field of Braille. I would say it's also an exciting time in the life of the Canadian Braille Authority. When I took on the presidency, I had no idea this was actually going to happen, so it came as a little bit of a surprise to me, but that's okay. On January 23rd of this year, a group of Braille experts, such as educators, transcribers, Braille users, producers, met at the CNIB headquarters in Toronto to discuss the state of Braille in Canada and just to examine how various organizations could work together to promote Braille across the country. Canada can be very regional, so trying to do things countrywide sometimes is a little more difficult. So sort of looking at how that can be done. It was proposed at this meeting that the name of CBA be changed to Braille Canada. And basically, we would be undergoing something of a metamorphosis, and we'll be rewriting bylaws to allow for the formal representation of key stakeholders. CBA is a fairly grassroots organization, and although we have individual membership and we do have corporate memberships where someone can be a member on behalf of the company they work for or the resource center they work for, it's not really as formally outlined in the bylaws. And really what we're trying to do is to just increase the involvement, in particular of the ministries of education, because they're the ones who they produce a lot of Braille in terms of for students, and so we really want to get them on board with what we're doing. Basically, Braille Canada, just as CBA is now, will have the mandate of promoting Braille as the primary means of literacy for people who are blind. That's not going to change. So this proposed change has been approved by the CBA board, and so we're working on all the documentation that we need to have ready to present to the membership at our annual general meeting in October of this year. And basically what will happen is that we will prepare everything, and then the membership has to actually officially approve it. We can't and won't make all of these changes without the approval of our membership. They get to vote on these things. So what's going to happen is that we'll approach the Canadian government to request increased support for Braille literacy. Our government hasn't been maybe as involved as we might like, so we're going to focus on that as well. So to that end, a discussion paper will be written, which is actually overseen by Betty Noble. She's coordinating that. The paper will explain state of Braille in Canada. It will outline the history of English Braille, Canada's involvement with BANA, the founding of CBA, and the role of CNIB in developing standards for Braille transcription. This paper is also going to provide information on research done by the CBA. It's going to discuss the future of Braille in Canada and how we should approach, how these things should be approached. CNIB may also be able to direct some funding for advocacy of Braille labeling and consumer products, and things such as research into the production of less costly Braille displays, again another issue that has come up that I feel very strongly about, and various other initiatives to be determined. In terms of Canada's involvement with BANA, Canadians have participated on BANA committees since the authority's inception. And one of the most significant projects has been the development of tactographics guidelines. These guidelines, which are now available on BANA's website, I believe that information is accurate, will facilitate the standardization of tactile graphics. And we'll just make sure that the tactile graphics that blind people receive are consistent and user-friendly. And just as kind of a personal note, I have made use of tactile graphics since I was a child, probably since before I started school, because my mother would make them for me, and she used to use either glue or crayons on papers placed over a piece of screen. And while I appreciate her resourcefulness and the resourcefulness of teachers that I had as a child, I'm really excited about the fact that there are official guidelines. I'm really excited about this initiative. I think it'll be really helpful for students and for adults as well. So I'm thankful for all the hard work and dedication that have made the tactile graphics guidelines a reality. The modifications to CBA, i.e. becoming Braille Canada, will not affect our involvement in BANA. It's more than anything, it's a membership issue and some restructuring, so it will not affect that at all. Canadian representation on BANA committees will continue. As the name of BANA indicates, that it really is North American, so we're glad to be involved. As I said at the beginning, a lot has happened in the last 4 years, but I think that the next 4 years, with all that's going on both nationally in Canada and internationally, that the next, with regard to Braille, that the next 4 years will also be pretty eventful, and that there will be a lot going on. So I look forward to what we will have to report in 2016. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jen. Any questions for Jen? We've got about 3 minutes of question time. Observer who is from?
My name is Andrew Mutambisi from Zimbabwe. We are a Braille Transcription Center, Dorothy Duncan Braille Library. I would like to find out from the Canadians how they manage to sort of get ministries in line with.
I'll let you know when we do it.
Yeah, because they are mainly the custodians of a majority of Braille users who are school children. You see, how to get them into this, we find it a problem. Could you a bit enlighten us on how you get along with government ministers?
I'm sorry, I shouldn't be laughing. We end up figuring out how we're going to do that. We do have some connections in terms of having people involved in CBA who work in the education system within the Ministry of Education, so we're kind of, they're able to help us in terms of, okay, well, these are some of the, one of the things that we were told was, make sure you don't go to them until you have your implementation strategy ready. Go to them and say, here's the situation of Braille in Canada, here's the state of it, here's all the pertinent information that you need, and here's how we propose to implement it. Because the person who suggested this was a board member who said, you need to have everything prepared before you go to them, as opposed to going to them and saying, okay, this is what we'd like to do. We want to implement this and we'd like you to be involved, whereas they said it was better to go to them and say, here's our strategy, and kind of giving them all the information so that we come prepared I'm sorry I can't provide you with a success story of, okay, this is how we did it and it worked, because quite honestly, we are about to embark on that. So if you want to ask me that question again in a few months, I would be happy to, you're more than welcome to do that in, by email, I guess, and I'd be happy to tell you what we did and how well it worked. So,
yeah, we are running very close to time. Bill Jolly, can you be really quick with your question, please?
Mine is a comment, Mary. And that is to in response to the last question from Andrew from Zimbabwe, it's my experience that very often ministries don't have policies in relation to Braille, but they do have practices and conventions and traditions. And so it's not so much a question of getting ministries to change their policy, but I think that the best success is by engagement with senior practitioners as part of the Braille authorities and as a part of the decision-making processes on Braille policy. And then if they become part of the Braille authority, familiar with the Braille-using community and the Braille-related networks, then it is much easier for those people to influence change at their workplace. And that, I think, is the approach, indicates the approach that would be most beneficial, rather than providing some unknown public servants with a policy for them to endorse. Because public servants, the bureaucracy worldwide, is risk-averse, and they will do nothing and think and procrastinate rather than take the risk of making a mistake. So it's got to be a different approach than providing ministries with policies to endorse, unless that's absolutely unavoidable.
Thank you, Bill. Betty Noble?
Yes, I just wanted to add a little bit to what Jen has been telling us, and that is that one of the stumbling blocks, I suppose, is the way you could talk about it, in Canada is the lack of data on cost. There's this fear that this transition to UEB is going to be extremely costly and being exactly the experience of people who have already implemented UEB. And so part of what we want to do, I think, is look at a cost-benefit strategy so that, in fact, if we can indicate to government that the cost of producing a technical book, if it's $50,000 now, and if we do it in UEB, maybe it'll only cost us $40,000 or $30,000 or something like that. If we can just come up with some clear information about that and address the issue of having to produce not having to produce books in two different codes, and by making the transition a gradual one, and also by indicating, as Jen mentioned, that the impact on the Braille user is probably not going to be as significant as we perhaps have anticipated that it will be. So it's a challenging and exciting time, as Jen mentioned, for Braille in Canada, and we're just so thankful for the countries that already have implemented UEB, and to those of you who have shared your experiences with us, it's going to be very helpful for us as we move forward.
Thank you. We need to move on to New Zealand and ask Maria Stevens to present her country report.
Can you hear from now? Okay. Oops. Good afternoon, everyone, and hello to those listening via stream. I wish to first acknowledge my tūpuna, my ancestors. And my whānau family, whose spirit and support I feel keenly around me as I bring to you the Braille Authority of New Zealand Aotearoa Trust BANZIC Country Report. In 2008 to 2012 have been historic years for Braille in New Zealand. 2008 was the first the first year of UEB implementation, 2009, saw the profile of Braille raised, Braille celebrations. 2010 saw the transformation of the New Zealand Braille Authority. And 2011 saw the Simply Touch and Read Braille Teaching Program, STAR, being used by adult students across the country. The combination of all these events has seen a resurgence of interest in Braille across New Zealand. Braille music continues to be alive and well in New Zealand, and the use of Braille technology in the classroom continues to grow. This report contains just a few highlights. 2008 was the day Unified English Braille went live in New Zealand. From that day, the default code for all Braille produced by the Royal New Zealand Foundation of the Blind, from that day, each school child beginning their Braille study through the Blind and Low Vision Education Network New Zealand lens began their Braille journey in UEB. Excuse me. And from that day, each teacher who was training to become a resource teacher vision received their Braille training in UEB. 2 years of planning and training preceded that day, and 4 years of transition were to follow. There were many challenges to overcome, some more of a surprise than others, but overall it was a time of cooperation and collaboration across the sector. Details of that transition period are not included in this country report, as they have been covered in the paper UEB Implementation in New Zealand 2008-2012, which has been presented at this General Assembly. Another paper being presented jointly at this General Assembly by Australia and New Zealand is the Trans-Tasman Braille Proficiency Certificate Experience 4 years on, which explains how the two countries work together to develop a shared Braille accreditation process. 2008 was also significant for blind taxi users, as legislation came into effect requiring all taxis to display important passenger information in Braille. The Land Transport Operator Licensing Rule means that from the 1st of October 2008, all taxis must have Braille sign with the name of the taxi company, the cab's unique fleet number, and the taxi company's contact phone number for complaints. For the first time, Braille has some kind of legal standing which will be enforced. This sets a wonderful precedent for things to come in this country. In 2009, at the beginning of 2009, a contingent from New Zealand and Paris, 7 Braille users and 3 sighted helpers knowledgeable in Braille, with over 450 attendees, two-thirds of whom were blind, the networking and Braille discussions were incredibly stimulating. It was great to hear about other people's experiences and passion for Braille. below are some of the New Zealand events that follow. Students attending immersion courses at Lens campus in 2009 were challenged to read about Louis Braille either online or in a Braille book. They were then asked to write a Braille story or essay about what they had learned. Libraries throughout New Zealand held displays and guest speaker events. They were sent a pack called Louis Braille and a Braille copy of a book called The Secret Code. This contains tactile pictures and will be theirs to keep. It's a great way to show Braille in action. In April 2009, Braille was taken to Parliament in the form of a Braille is Knowledge event hosted by Minister Anne Tully. This event featured speakers who shared briefly how important Braille is in their lives. There was a display table containing Braille items, such as menus, signs, a Braille display, and more. All those who attended had their name written in Braille on a raffle ticket in order to win a food hamper with the contents labelled in Braille. This was seen as an opportunity to build networks around future lobbying for greater access to government and other public information. In May 2009, the Wellington Botanic Gardens launched a permanent walk honouring Louis Braille and his code. The walk features plants interesting to senses other than vision, printed Braille signs containing numbers and plant names, and a brochure featuring those same numbers with more information about the plants. The brochure also contains Louis Braille facts themed, where possible, to the plants they accompany. Brochures are available in Braille as well as print, and it is hoped that people will learn about Louis Braille and the importance of Braille literacy in a meaningful way through the garden's beautiful surroundings. Although endeavours to persuade New Zealand Post to have a Louis Braille stamp in 2009 failed, RNZFB Braille Awareness Consultant did succeed in having a street in the new Flatbush development south of Auckland named Louis Braille Lane. It was also encouraging that one of the winners of the 2009 Onkyo Braille Essay Contest was a New Zealander. 2010. The Braille Authority of New Zealand, BANZ, was founded in 1989 and was run under the auspices of the RNZFB. BANZ was responsible for code issues, and a separate committee, the Braille Literacy Panel, BLP, was responsible for other issues around the teaching, production and promotion of Braille. It was decided that the two functions should be merged, and that this would be a good opportunity to make the new entity independent of its supporting agencies. After legal advice, it was decided to create a trust which would be registered with the New Zealand Charities Commission. On the morning of Tuesday, the 10th of August 2010, the Braille Authority of New Zealand and the Braille Literacy Panel held their final joint meeting. At this meeting, a list of issues was identified. In the afternoon of the same day, the Braille Authority of New Zealand, through our trust, BANZ, held their very first meeting, and BANZ was officially born. Since that date, 9 meetings have been held, and work on the issues list received from BANZ BLP is well on its way. Before that day, much thought was given to the trust deed, which acts as a constitution. 7 of the trustees are appointed, 2 by Blind and Low Vision Education Network New Zealand, BLENZ, 2 by the Royal New Zealand Foundation of the Blind, RNZFB, 1 by Ngāti Kapo Aotearoa Inc., an organisation established for blind Māori, 1 by Parents of Vision Impaired New Zealand Inc., PVI, and 1 by the Association of Blind Citizens of New Zealand Inc., ABC. These 7 trustees then appoint up to 4 additional trustees to ensure that the group includes adequate Braille expertise. It was her involvement with this whole process that led Mary Schneckenberg to write the paper on setting up Braille authorities, which she presented at Braille 21. One of the issues that BANZ and BLP had been supporting in partnership with the ABC was the writing of accessible signage guidelines for New Zealand. These were launched on the same day as the first BANZ meeting and are being promoted to the signage industry to ensure they are widely used and followed. Challenge of monitoring signage. What is the best way to accurately confirm the height and spacing of dots? We hope ICEB colleagues may have some answers for us. So that's a question for people here. In May 2010, New Zealand was proud to host the Roundtable on Information Conference, the title Think Globally, Act Locally. This was the first time the conference had been held in New Zealand, and RNZFB produced over 4,000 Braille pages for the delegates, including hotel and tourist information, programs and menus. Also launched in 2010 was the Simply Touch and Read Braille Teaching Program, STAR, and more information on this is included in the paper UEB Implementation in New Zealand 2008-2012. I'm getting there. 2011. During 2010 and 2011, building work was in progress to create a new purpose-built school for the Homai campus of BLENZ, based in South Auckland. The school is built in an open arc with the library and its Braille books at the very centre. In July 2011, the BLEMS students and the RNZFB Homo Special Formats Library also moved into the stunning new building, and adjustments to the new open plan environment have gone well. In conjunction with New Zealand Post, Santa was able to send children Braille and print letters for the first time. The Braille is single-spaced, contracted UEB, and includes a verbalisation of the picture. Braille letters are accompanied by a print version so an adult can help the child read if necessary. It is great the New Zealand Post are so committed to literacy in accessible format. Another initiative coordinated by the RNZF Brief Braille Awareness Consultant is around poems in the waiting room. This is a project that provides a print booklet of poems in medical waiting rooms as an alternative to the standard magazines. These are now also available in Braille, and new issues of the Braille booklet have also been popular with RNZFB library users. A successful collaboration during 2011 was the hosting by the RNZFB of a new civil defence resource published in Braille and other accessible formats. The Get Ready, Get Through, spelled T-H-R-U, I know, brochure produced by the Ministry and Emergency Management is aimed at improving understanding of the types of hazards that can happen in New Zealand, with civil defence advice on what to do to be prepared. The recent Christchurch earthquake has made this more topical than ever before. The brochure is available in print or audio from the library and at the RNZFB website. BANZAT ran a speech competition in 2011 where students prepared a speech and fronted up to a video camera to present it from their Braille copy. RNZFB held a farewell in October for Raylene Smith, who was leaving after more than 30 years of service. Accessible format production have also recognised three long-serving staff members working in Braille production, one 10 years, one 15 years, and one 20 years, which echoes the sentiment that Braille is addictive. On a sad note, two long-serving Braille producers have been lost, one a staff member and one a volunteer, who started in Braille production in 1986. Now, ongoing, Parents of Vision Impaired, NZ Inc., PVI, have approximately 2,000 parents nationwide. PVI enrolls parents who have blind or vision impaired children. Their mission statement is, "As parents, we strive to achieve the best opportunities for our blind, vision impaired children." Their Vision magazine is a tool designed to inform and unite parents of blind and vision impaired children, and they hold an annual conference. New Zealand has an email list called NZBRL for discussions and dissemination of information relating to Braille, particularly as used in New Zealand. Anyone who actively uses or works in the field of Braille is encouraged to join. One of the regular items on the list is the Braille Mail newsletter, which is circulated three times a year by the RNZFB Braille Awareness Consultant. Braille music activities in New Zealand. New Zealand has a number of initiatives in operation, creating diverse opportunities for students to experience music, develop their practical skills, and learn the Braille music code. BLEMS Whānau Campus hosts a monthly music school held on a Saturday morning for students within the Greater Auckland area. At present, 19 students are enrolled, 12 of whom are Braille users. The program consists of dance/movement classes, music theory and Braille music, choir, band, vocal group, and a beginning instrumentalists group. In addition to this, 12 students are supported through individual music lessons each week, and students with complex needs are supported by BLEMS resident music therapist. The campus also hosts several music-based immersion courses that bring together students from other parts of the country for weekend or week-long intensive music programs. Courses include junior, intermediate and senior music, music therapy and music technology. Outside of the campus, school and the Auckland area, more students are being supported by teachers within their community. Recent trials using Skype have been successful in teaching Braille music to those who do not have a Braille music teacher available to them locally. RNZFB has one active music transcriber for music requests from all over the country. A former Nemeth transcriber is undergoing music training using Introduction to Braille Music Transcription, the new Degamo. Approximately 2,000 pages of music Braille are produced each year. The music is for educational, vocational, and recreational requirements. The requests include formats for piano, solo instruments, vocal parts, scores, theory, and exam papers. A scanned image is kept of each request so that it can be referred to if a different request is received for the same piece. Also, a printout of the original music can be sent with a repeat Braille request. Using SharpEye or Lime, a MIDI or MP3 sound file can be made of the music or just a selected part of the music, for example, left hand only, or just the tenor part or second flute part. This can easily be emailed to the musician. Being able to hear the tune and rhythm while following the Braille can be a helpful aid to learning a new piece. It can also be recorded at a slower tempo than performance speed. The RNZFB has a library newsletter on the telephone information service of which gives reviews of some of the newly recorded talking books. The same newsletter is now being used to announce recently transcribed music. 6 varied pieces are selected and a narrator reads a short description of each piece, including the approximate grade and the type of transcription, basic or full score. Then the narration is followed by a 30-second sound clip of the piece exported from SharpEye or Lime software. This helps to promote recently transcribed music so that it can be requested by others. This overview of Braille music ends the New Zealand Country Report. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Maria. Now, I'm sorry, we're really running out of time. I'm going to allow two just a minute's questions. So, does anyone have any questions for Maria? Betty Noble.
Just a quick one. I think it's very helpful to have a Braille consultant supporting Braille activities, and I'm wondering how long has the Royal New Zealand Foundation of the Blind had a Braille consultant?
That is a very good question. I heard someone say that yesterday, so I thought I'd use that as well, and I'm thinking of an answer. I think we've just been discussing this, and we think that the first person to receive this, to come to this position, was in 2002, and our latest Braille consultant started in 2008.
Any more questions? No? Right. Thank you, everyone. We're going to afternoon tea now. Please be back by 3:15. We have 4 country reports in the final 90 minutes. By my maths, that's 22 minutes a report. So if we can try and be really prompt. Thank you very much, everyone.
That's got to stretch our legs.
Sarah, do you guys have an internet connection?
Okay, this is a bit of tea break that we'll have. I think we'll play some music I won't be going for tea. I'll be sitting here monitoring, replying to emails, etc., etc. Also, remember that you can follow us on Twitter. The Twitter handle is ICEB2012. That's ICEB2012. And yeah, on Twitter we'll tell you obviously when we're coming back on, when we're going off, etc., etc. So if you have any issues, please send us an email at the email address is live@ICEB2012.net. That's live@ICEB2012.net.
Can I interrupt? Hi. I'm from Australia. We've got a few people saying that they're having trouble connecting.
Thank you.